Hello, fellow Powder Hounds, and welcome to the Powder Hounds Podcast, the Ski Trivia Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Shaw. You can follow me at Powder Hound Skis. You can also email me at powderhoundskitrivia@gmail.com for comments, questions, or corrections. Catamount has been utterly transformed since the Schaefers have taken over. They have done a great job at putting Catamount back on the map. I never hesitate to recommend it when asked about a fun place that's an easy drive from the New York City metro area. Catamount is an excellent natural ski mountain, fall lines, headwalls, trails winding through the trees. It may be the biggest secret in skiing and riding, and it's getting better all the time. The relatively short drive, terrain variety, and reasonable price made Catamount my favorite. Those are the descriptions of Catamount Ski Area from New York Ski Blog, Storm Ski Journal, Mass Live, and a local and season pass holder, the takes of which I agree with. A lot of people really dig the place. It's one of the oldest ski areas in the region, so let's give you a reason or two to check it out. The music inspiration is Phish with two nods. The first to the alma mater of where the band was founded, the University of Vermont, the mascot of which is the Catamount. And for those into March Madness, those same Catamounts just punched their ticket to a number 13 seed by winning the 2024 Northeast Conference basketball tournament. The second nod is to Catamount Ski Area's signature trail, Catapult, a Phish song. While live versions of Phish's Catapult are fun, the album recording of the track is not a song, though it is followed by Tweeter Reprise with lyrics that preach cold temperatures. Whether you agree the reference makes sense or cannot disagree more, I invite you to sit back, kick your feet up, relax, and enjoy the experience of everything skiing and riding, Powder Hounds. Sources for today's episode: Berkshire Eagle, BraveSkiMom.com, CatamountSki.com, Historians of Hillsdale, New England Ski Journal, New York Ski Blog, NSAA, SkiingHistory.org, SkiMap.org, Snow Journal, Storm Ski Journal, Rojan, Independent, Unofficial Networks, Wikipedia. Kick things off with a familiar segment, a lightning round of top ski news from Ski World. We begin with actual news. Spring means only one thing. On sale now, season passes for next season. Among the four biggies, at least, I'll just go through the price increases for the most part. Epic passes, $73 price increase for Epic Pass, $55 increase for Epic Local. You know the partner mountains by now, not going to go through it. Icon Pass, $90 increase for full Icon, $40 increase for Icon Base Pass, with renewal discounts of up to $100. You know the partner mountains by now, not going to go through it. Indie Pass, $0 price increase, that's right. And the pass guarantees 200 partner ski areas or full refund. And the headliners return: Jay Peak, Vermont, Waterville Valley, New Hampshire, Cannon, New Hampshire, and 198 others? And Mountain Collective, $35 increase for adults with or without the renewal discount with 30 partner destinations. Moving on to weather. The March 9th through 10th bomber dropped 6 to 14 inches in much of the Northeast, certainly extending the East season, maybe saving it. And as of March 19th, a lingering storm dropped up to 7 more inches in parts of Vermont, enough to warrant a Ski Vermont powder alert. And the upcoming weekend weather looks snowy on Saturday and again on Monday. April skiing, here we come. But with the good comes the bad and the ugly. While northern New England is smiling, much of southern New England packed up our bags for the 2024 season, which segues, unfortunately, well with terrain closings. Sorry, but here's a rundown of ski areas that have closed their doors this season, and I'm sure I'm missing plenty. Arrowhead, Baker, Big Moose, Big Rock, Black Mountain of New Hampshire, Blue Hills, Bosquet, Camden Snow Bowl, Camelback, Dartmouth Skiway, Elk, Granite Gorge, Hidden Valley, Kissing Bridge, Maple Ridge, McIntyre, Mohawk, Montage, Mount Southington, Neshoba Valley, Plattekill, S6, Ski Big Bear, Ski Bradford, Ski Butternut, Ski Keechee, Whaleback, and Yagoo Valley. And if you never heard of any of those ski areas, make a note to ski them next season. More positively, segueing into spring signature events. So many. Here's a quick rundown of what's coming up. March 23rd, Reggae Fest at Mount Snow, Vermont. March 29th to 30th, Bust and Burn on White Heat, Sunday River, Maine. March 30th, 70s Spring Send-Off at Attitash, New Hampshire. March 30th, Spring Beach Party, Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. March 31st, Easter Egg Hunt, Waterville Valley, New Hampshire. April 2nd to 3rd, The Sugar Slalom at Stowe, Vermont. April 2nd, Gunstock, Pond Skim in New Hampshire. April 6th, Bear Mountain Mogul Challenge, Killington, Vermont. April 6th, Sugarbush Pond Skim in Vermont. April 11th to 14th, Reggae Fest at Sugarloaf in Maine. Plenty of cardboard derbies. And most importantly, April 8th, total eclipse of the sun will black out skies across northern New England. The last time it will do so until 2044. So book your lodging today. Moving on to our main segment, Catamount Ski Area. We'll begin with a little history lesson. It all started in 1939 with John Jack Falconer Fisher III. Actually, the inspiration started in the mid-1920s thanks to Roland Palmito. Yes, the same Roland Palmito from the early Mount Mansfield days at Stowe, who rode the train from New York City to Hillsdale, New York, along with members of the New York Amateur Ski Club. Their goal? Climb Mount Frey and ski down. Jack Fisher joined them, and the experience solidified his hunch that the Nicholson Farm, of which sits on Mount Frey and its northern exposure slope, was indeed a prime location for a ski area. In the spring, summer, and fall of 1939, Jack and his friend and early partner, George Erling, began hand-cutting trails. They even had to hand-rake the slopes. That must have taken a while. The first trails opened were Onstage and Catamount Trails, both of which are still on the trail map today, with a vertical drop of 625 feet. A year or two later, the trail's Big and Little Dipper would open. After adding a couple of rope toes, quote, of which few could handle, end quote, reflected Fisher decades later, the Catamount Hill Ski Toe opened for business for the 1939-1940 season. The cost of a day ticket, $1. The cost of a 10-ticket coupon book, $6.50. Hourly wage for staff, 50 cents. The ski area initially only operated on weekends. Many skiers came up from New York City on the infamous ski trains, one of which then ran to Hillsdale, New York. The round-trip fare? $2. And when skiers arrived, the trucks and farm wagons that picked them up were filled with hay bales, which were used for seeding, delivering them to the ski area in what must have been a memorable ride. In 1945, Fisher owned and operated the ski area outright and led a massive development. He also bought more land, this time near Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and built the Jiminy Peak Ski Area. I guess he had some time on his hands. There he built two rope toes and a T-bar. In 1964, he installed a chair to serve Jiminy's full 1,100-foot vertical and also helped bring the Salisbury, Connecticut ski jump to fruition. That event still happens today. But back to Catamount. In 1947, the ski area set a record. While 3,200 paid skiers was an incredibly successful day. It was the 1,700 skiers that were turned away that confirmed the hunch this place was special. In 1958, a T-bar was installed. In 1960, snowmaking enabled the ski area to extend operating hours to weekdays. The ski school, which incredibly started in 1940 under Walter Fenn, aka Walter's Run, on the present-day trail map, which we're going to get into, was followed by Grover Shoemaker and then the famous Austrian skier Tony Matt. In 1961, Fisher built a chairlift to Catamount Summit, providing the 1,000 feet of vertical. By 1969, Catamount had two double chairs, two T-bars, and one J-bar serving 10 trails. But in the late 1960s and early 1970s, consecutive seasons of bad rainstorms led Fisher to get out of the business. He sold Jimny Peak to Brian Fairbank in 1969, the same Fairbank group that owns Cranmore, New Hampshire, and I believe Bromley in Vermont. And he sold Catamount to Bill and Sandy Gilbert and Don Edwards in 1973. Fun fact, Bill Gilbert co-invented the airless snow gun. Yeah. Tom Gilbert and Don's son, Rich Edwards, later took over operations in the early 2000s. Gilbert and Edwards, involved in the ski area for decades, were looking for ways to generate more revenue. A planned luxury condo complex known as the Berkshire Mountain Club fell through in 2015 when the developer pulled out. With the need for additional revenue to stay competitive, the ski area went up for sale. And in 2018, John Schaefer purchased Catamount to complement his nearby ski area, Berkshire East, in Massachusetts. Moving on to the mountain profile, the stats. Year opened 1939. Location, Hillsdale, New York, part of the Taconic Range. Nearby ski areas, Butternut, 20 minutes, Otis Ridge, 35 minutes, Bosque, 40 minutes, Mohawk, 46 minutes, Jimny Peak, about an hour, and Berkshire East sits approximately 90 minutes north of Catamount. Base elevation, 1,000 feet, summit elevation, 2,000 feet, vertical drop, 1,000 feet, lifts, 5 with 3 carpets, 2 fixed grip quads, Ridge and Catamount, 3 triples, Glade, Meadows, and Promenade, all of which, remarkably, were relocated from another ski area. Trail acreage, 133 acres on 44 trails, 35% beginner, 42% intermediate, and 23% advanced. Average annual snowfall, 108 inches, snowmaking, 99%, terrain parks, yes. Season, last year the season ran from December 15th to April 2nd. Interestingly, this year, Catamount opened on November 30th before Berkshire East on December 2nd. Night skiing, yes. Signature trail, of course, Catapult, the double black diamond under the Ridge Quad. Ticket to entry, the prices. Lift tickets. As of today, there was a $58 adult day ticket, likely spring skiing pricing, a season pass, the Berkshire Summit Pass, which allows unlimited access to Catamount, Berkshire East, and Bosque, started at $549 last year and ended at $769. However, a spring pass, the Spring Equinox Pass, went on sale in early March, unlimited spring skiing for $149. Pass affiliations, again, Berkshire Summit Pass, unlimited access, Indy Base Pass, and Indy Plus Pass, 2 days without blackout dates, but reservations are required. Ownership, we flew through it already. John, Jack, Falconer, Fisher, III, Don Edwards, Bill Gilbert, Sandy Gilbert, and their kids, Tom and Gilbert and Rich Edwards, and then John Schaefer in the present day. Also of note, Catamount is uniquely located. Half of the mountain is in Massachusetts, half is in New York. And locals often refer to the steeper side as the New York side and the gentler side as the Massachusetts side. And initial changes under Schaefer caused some local consternation about clear-cutting of Catamount's front side trails, upper turnpike, and expressway, making way for expert terrain known as Ripper and eventually Christopher's Leap. Now, digging a little deeper into recent changes under John Schaefer's team. During the 2018-19 season, the main Berkshire Lodge was renovated and a used triple chair promenade was installed on the Massachusetts side. Should note the Berkshire Lodge is home to the ski school these days. The summer 2018, Catamount introduced the Zip Tour on its Catamonster zip line. In the 2019-2020 ski season, the new Catamount Lodge opened with additional seating, a store, and ticketing operations. Four new trails with snowmaking also opened with varying difficulty: Christopher's Leap, Marty's Run, Ripper, and my personal favorite, Shawman. At least that's how I'm going to pronounce it. It's actually spelled Shawanon, but Shawman kind of sounds better. During the 2020-2021 season, the new Catamount Lodge began offering food services with additional seating in its second floor. The old Glade double chair was removed, making way for a used triple chair in its place, also called Glade. In addition to the new Glade triple, a new quad chair, named the Catamount Quad, replaced the old Catamount double during the 2021-2022 season. Again, this was that chaotic lift project period. Other additions included more snowmaking, a new snow tubing park separate from the skier traffic, a redesigned learning area with three magic carpets, and more dining options. In summary, in less than 2 years, the existing lodge has been renovated, a new lodge was built next to it, new lifts were installed, and seven new trails, all of them with snowmaking, were cut. The area also purchased two new groomers, 200 snow guns, and created four new ponds that will provide more water for snowmaking. Also of note, an exciting expansion possibility. About a decade or so ago, a lift and a variety of trails were proposed for the west side of the ski area in New York, crossing over the lower Sidewinder Trail. The lift would climb 650 vertical feet from a new parking lot to the junction of Upper and Lower Sidewinder. Six trail segments would be cut above and below the lower switchback of the Lower Sidewinder Trail. And this would actually include a remote base. However, the project is not permitted. And John Schaefer recently told the Storm Ski Journal, essentially, it's not happening anytime soon. Moving on to my experience, or perhaps the inspiration for the episode. Now, I've been skiing Catamount consistently for 5 seasons and have grown fond of the place. It's an easy drive for me, it's affordable, and the terrain varied enough to keep me entertained. Also, that whole lift overhaul, a chaotic mess for a couple seasons, is complete. This year, I learned all about Catamount Ski School thanks to my kiddos first on sticks. 2 snow play days, more like snow play hours at a separate ski area where we live, gave us both the confidence to go to a big ski area with a longer magic carpet, steeper beginner slope, and thousands of people buzzing around in every direction for hours on end. The Catamount Ski School experience could not have gone better. Catamount is one of a surprisingly few number of ski areas that have one-time group lessons for 3-year-olds. By one time, I just mean no season lesson program or commitment. At least in my research, the majority of group ski lessons start at 4 years old, though you can always pay for a private lesson for any age. And there were some seasonal lesson programs for 3-year-olds, but that was too much upfront time commitment, and some of the sessions were just 45 minutes or 1 hour long. I get that works if you live nearby, but otherwise, that doesn't leave a lot of time for the parents to get their laps in. I should also note, I tended to look only at lesson options for ski areas on passes I have. Catamount, as you just heard, has offered a ski school since 1940. Fast forward to 2024, 84 years later, and the Mountain Cat program seems to be a winner. At least that's what a bunch of people told me on the lift. The progression program is a 3-hour morning or afternoon program with many kids signing up for both sessions. After my son's first lesson, a jam-packed, snowy Sunday, midwinter, he proclaimed that among the 850 kids in his group lesson, All right, wasn't that many. He had fun. The cookie at break was great, and he wanted to do it again. We even skied his last run on the beginner slope together. Success. A couple weeks later, his second lesson, a slushy spring day with only four other kids in his group, lesson, pretty much a private lesson, he proclaimed his independence from the magic carpet. I kid you not, while riding the Ridge Quad, I just loaded, on an extremely quiet day, overcast, slushy, warm, I heard his voice echo from the base area, "Teacher, teacher, I'm over here," as he loaded, stood, and eventually successfully unloaded the magic carpet without assistance. We skied three runs together on that beginner area slope. Success again. His instructor told me after the lesson, their second time out is all about independence and that I have one independent skier on my hands. While fresh snow, open slopes, and no lines usually make the best ski days, the, I'm going to call it, echoes of independence made it my best ski day of the season. Also of note, there are a few nearby dining options we embraced on our way to the hill. After all, skiing and snacks are a natural combination. Sugar and Rye in Sheffield, breakfast sandwiches to go, hearty soups, signature sandwiches, Sweet Pea Diner in Hillsdale, heaping portions of food, complemented by organized chaos of the patrons. And Mom's Cafe in Egremont, charming Brookside dining. One last observation on Catamount before we get to the trivia questions, and that is the trail network, but not what you may assume. I'm curious about all their trails that are named after people, like Walter's Way. We know that's Walter Fenn, the first ski instructor at the ski school. But what about Kelly's Run or Christopher's Leap? There are many, many more. I can understand if this kind of thing, the meaning behind a trail's name, never occurred to you. But this is how my mind works, if you haven't figured that out already. Well, I can only think of one obvious comparison of a ski area with a lot of trails named after a person, and that would be Stowe. Catamount is up there. And that got me thinking, why don't ski areas ever have information on trail names? The answer, of course, is 99.9% of people probably don't care and wouldn't care. And that's a fair point. But then my mind wandered and I started thinking about how musicians tend to avoid talking about the meaning of lyrics so that people can experience that music and interpret the lyrics however they choose. And that's great, and that's powerful. But in terms of trail names, I want to know who the heck Christopher is and what kind of leap he did at Catamount. Now, I'm a reasonable person. I'm not talking about creating an inventory on every trail name and its meaning at every ski area across the US. Or am I? No, I'm not. I'm really not. But maybe ski areas can point out the significant ones tucked away somewhere on their website, trail map, or maybe decorated along the walls of their lodge. I suppose the significant ones are universally known. As an example at Stowe, you have Perry Merrill. Literally, the trail name is the famous forest commissioner's name. Then there is Lord for Charlie Lord, trail design extraordinaire, and Star for C.V. Star, AIG founder who once owned Stowe, and Sepp's Run for Sepp Rush, the famous ski school director and ski team coach. But there are also trails named Houghton's and Hackett's Highway and Freddie Chute and Phil Zuggy, all on Stowe's trail map. Who the heck are these people? If you know, email me. Most ski areas have a trail or two named after important people who made skiing happen there. It would be cool to know more of those stories. Moving on to the trivia questions. Now we have 9 trivia questions for each decade of Catamount's existence. As always, I will read through all the questions once, then go back through them, revealing each answer. Here we go. Question number 1, multiple choice. Catamount is one of only 4 ski areas in the US that is located in 2 different states. Now, to make this question somewhat easier, in what mountain region are the other 3 located? A, Adirondacks, B, Lake Tahoe, C, Rockies, or D, the White Mountains? Question number 2, also multiple choice. The Taconic Mountains extend about 180 miles from southern Dutchess County, New York, and northwestern Connecticut up through Berkshire County, Massachusetts, and onto Brandon, Vermont. What state is home to the highest point of the Taconic Range? A, Connecticut, B, Massachusetts, C, New York, or D, Vermont? Question number three, also multiple choice. According to NSAA, National Ski Areas Association, Catamount is the third oldest ski area in New York. Which ski area is the oldest? A, Bel Air, B, Gore, C, Mount Peter, or D, Whiteface? Question number four, also multiple choice. In the 1950s, Jack Fisher had a chance encounter on a Manhattan sidewalk with an advertising executive from the Leo Burnett Agency who thought that Jack had the right look for a print ad campaign. What was the product? A, Ford Mustang convertibles, B, Levi's jeans, C, Marlboro cigarettes, or D, Rolex watches? Question number five, also multiple choice. Catamount markets itself as an all-season resort. One of its features is known as the longest in the U.S. What is it? A, downhill mountain bike trail, B, mountain coaster, C, water slide, or D, zip line? Question number six, also multiple choice. What is Meacham's Grove? A, a group of evergreen trees, B, a memorial, C, a sign affixed to a lift tower, or D, all of the above? Question number seven, also multiple choice. The trail Fisher's Fluke, a blue square, pays homage to not only Catamount's founder, but who else? A, his brother, B, his daughter, C, his son, or D, his wife? Question number eight, yeah, it's multiple choice. What is the newest trail cut on Catamount? A, Christopher's Leap, B, Lookout, C, Marty's Run, or D, Ripper? And question number nine, it's not multiple choice. It's guess a number. How many trails are named after a person at Catamount? All right, pencils down. Let's reveal those answers. Question number one, Catamount is one of only four ski areas in the United States that is located in two different states. What mountain regions are the other three located? And I should add, this is actually a select all that apply. So how about that? Little twist right there for you. So go through them again. Adirondacks, Lake Tahoe, Rockies, or White Mountains. And yes, Lake Tahoe would be the Sierra. The answers? B, Lake Tahoe and the Sierras, and C, the Rockies. So the Lake Tahoe or Sierra region is heavenly, located in both California and Nevada. While there are signs on the trails noting the state borders, the real difference is at the base, where gambling is allowed in Nevada, but not in California. As for the Rockies, we have two. We have Lookout Pass, located in both Idaho and Montana. Now, this is really interesting. Not only is Lookout Pass a two-state ski area, it is a two-time zone resort, which can mean confusion. Cell phone clocks change as skiers and riders traverse between mountain and Pacific times. Folks who sign up for a two-hour lesson sometimes protest they only got an hour's worth of instruction when they glance at their cell phones. The resort officially operates on Pacific Standard Time. The other ski area is Lost Trail Powder Mountain, also in Idaho and Montana, and it's noteworthy because it is significantly larger than Lookout Pass. Question number two. The Taconic Mountains extend about 180 miles from New York through Connecticut up through Massachusetts and onto Vermont. What state is home to the highest point of the Taconic Range? A, Connecticut, B, Massachusetts, C, New York, or D, Vermont? The answer? Yeah, it's D. It's Vermont. Mount Equinox, 3,816 feet, located in Manchester, Vermont. Question number three. According to National Ski Areas Association, Catamount is the third oldest ski area in New York. Which ski area is the oldest? A, Bel Air, B, Gore, C, Mount Peter, or D, Whiteface? The answer? It's B, it's Gore. Yes, Gore opened in 1934, followed by C, Mount Peter in 1936, followed by Catamount in 1939, as well as Victor Constant, also opened in 1939. So not quite sure we can go back to that newspaper and check out exactly when those ribbons were cut. So maybe we'll say tied for third. And then Bel Air opened in 1949 and Whiteface in 1958 of the ski areas mentioned here. Should also note that all ski areas mentioned are currently operating. Question number four. In the 1950s, Jack Fisher had that chance encounter on a Manhattan sidewalk with an advertising exec from the Leo Burnett Agency who thought he had the right look for a print ad campaign. What was the product? A, Ford Mustang convertibles, B, Levi's jeans, C, Marlboro cigarettes, or D, Rolex watches? The answer? C, Marlboro cigarettes. Yeah, Burnett had the Marlboro cigarette account and was scouting for someone to serve as the Marlboro man in print ads. The exec thought that Jack had the look, and Jack became one of the earliest Marlboro men. And if you're curious, Ford Mustang convertibles first appeared in 1964, Levi's jeans in the 1960s, but Rolex watches way earlier, 1905. Question number five. Catamount markets itself as an all-season resort. One of its features is known as the longest in the U.S. What is it? A, downhill mountain bike trail, B, mountain coaster, C, water slide, or D, zipline? The answer? Yeah, I think I gave this one away already. It would be D, zipline. The longest zipline span in the U.S. The Catamount Zip Tour is unlike any other zipline tour in the area. This two-hour outdoor experience includes three dual zipline spans and a chairlift ride up the mountain. The unique braking system allows you to control your speed and race another person down the dual span at speeds of up to 55 miles per hour, or take it nice and slow while soaking in the views of the Berkshires and the Hudson Valley. The final span of the tour is dubbed the Catamonster and is the longest zipline span in the U.S. at just over 1 mile long. Question number six. What is Meacham's Grove? A group of evergreen trees, B, a memorial, C, a sign affixed to a lift tower, and D, or D, all of the above. The answer? Yeah, it's D, it's all of the above. And the only reason I started giggling a little bit was because every time I see this, for some reason, my mind goes to Weekapaw Groove, and I have to train myself not to say that. So I apologize to the Meacham family. Thomas H. Meacham is honored on this sign. The sign reads, a great friend and lover of Catamount who made everyone feel special. And the lift tower is located along the Ridge Quad where Catapult, Signature Trail, and Fish Song, where that trail ends. Damn it. Question number seven. The trail Fisher's Fluke, a blue square, pays homage to not only Catamount's founder, Jack Fisher, but who else? A, his brother, B, his daughter, C, his son, or D, his wife? The answer? It's D. It's his wife. Yeah. Florence Flukey Kendall. Florence ran the ski shop and Flukey was her nickname. Question number eight. What is the newest trail cut on Catamount? A, Christopher's Leap, B, Lookout, C, Marty's Run, or D, Ripper? The answer? It's B, it's Lookout. Yeah. And I confirmed this when comparing trail maps on skimap.org. Thank you very much. It debuted in the 2020-2021 season, although, interesting piece, a comment from the New York Ski Blog article, the author wrote, I do not understand why Lookout, the new trail above Sidewinder, is not open before Christopher's Leap and Ripper, both steep double diamonds. Lookout is a blue square. It would serve more skiers, Lookout, is a nice alternative route and also takes pressure off of the crowded intersection that gets skied off just above Sidewinder. It has been cut 3 years now and I have yet to see it open. Yes, that's actually been my experience too. It's never been open while I'm there. Though that is a reason, perhaps alone, to come back to Catamount. I have never skied the whole mountain. But yes, that does serve as a question. Has Lookout ever opened? If you know the answer, email me. And question number 9, guess a number. How many trails are named after a person at Catamount? The answer, I'll give you a hint, it's double digits. All right, stop looking at that trail map. It's 10. Alley's Alley, Christopher's Leap, Colonel's Caper, Echo's Run, Fisher's Fluke, Lauren's Run, Kelly's Run, Marty's Run, Walter's Way, Spencer's Way. Did I get them all? I think I did. That's it. Thank you for playing. Go check out Catamount for some spring turns before it's too late. Looks like it's 4 o'clock. Time to catch the last chair. Thank you for listening. Have a question, comment, or correction? Email me at powderhoundskitrivia@gmail.com. You can also email me at powderhoundskis. Better yet, subscribe to the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast Manager, Verbal, Spotify, and Stitcher. Just type Powderhounds Podcast. Until next time, see you on the slopes, Powderhounds. We'll be right back.